Welcome everyone to our first session of Teaching Peace in Schools, Cultivating Restorative School Communities. A very special thanks goes out to the Peace Alliance and also to the National Association of Community and Restorative Justice, acronym of NACRJ, for co-presenting and co-hosting this extraordinary 10-week overview course. We hope it proves to be both highly informative and inspiring, as well as a way to build a strong web of community. To that end, we've created a discussion forum at bit.ly/teachpeaceforum. That's bit.ly/teachpeaceforum. That's all one word. You will also want to keep handy the master website, which will be your access for all audio recordings, which you can revisit at any time, the resources that are coming to us from all our wonderful faculty, as well as useful links to materials and books and multimedia, as well as information that is going to be key for you for each session. So all that and more. Please remember to write down, and we'll have this on the screen share tonight for you as well, visually. So those of you on the screen share, you're going to get to see some wonderful visuals of tonight's presentation, as well as have very practical tools up on the screen for you to copy down and just remember for the duration. That's at peacealliance.org/teach-peace-course. The password is peace is the way. That's all one word. Peace is the way. Again, the website is peacealliance.org/teach-peace-course. Password, peace is the way. So again, welcome everyone, and I am your host, Molly Rowan Leach. I am honored to serve as the Restorative Justice Fellow for the Peace Alliance, and I've also done quite a bit of work partnering with NACRJ to support the exponential sharings of the work of restorative practices and beyond. It's an honor to be with you tonight. And just a few little bits before we go into our time with our very special faculty and guides tonight. While you are participating in the audio broadcast of this session and all sessions, you can also be with us on the screen share. Now, you got that link in your confirmation email, and it's also housed at our master site, which I just provided to you along with the password. The atmosphere tonight, and every session is one of participation and connectivity, as well as ample time for you to ask questions and address your unique needs with our faculty. Tonight, when the time comes for conversation with our guides, simply press 1 on your telephone for a question or comment. That's simply just pressing 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're coming in through Skype, you can press 1. There is a Skype telephone keypad that you can use, and it will come through to us. So we will see you and that you have a question for us. Just a reminder, next week we are going to naturally link in from tonight's session, which is I'm about to introduce to you. Of course, the title of it is Nurturing Strong Roots for Systemic Change. And next week, we'll be joined by Nancy Riesenberg and Rita Alfred for Circling the Square. And we'll be showing a slide tonight that has a little bit more information about Rita and Nancy's session. We feel that there's just a natural link from nurturing the roots into next week's session, going into really in the trenches service work that a lot of us are doing. So without further ado, of course, many of you know Kay Prannis and Carolyn Boyes Watson. I believe they share their passion, and so many of us do, their humble commitment to the field of restorative practices in a way that tunes a chord deeply. Their co-authored books, Heart of Hope and Circle Forward, have sold fervently in many of the United States' major school districts. And of course, in tonight's session, we are diving in with them to explore nurturing strong roots for systemic change. Now, just keep in mind that we will have a lot more information and links and resources for you, as well as a PDF that was sent to us or was sent to you, that is, in your email confirmation from Carolyn and Kay that you can look at your own time. And we'll be linking that as well on our master site. Carolyn and Kay, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and let's dive in.
All right. Thank you so much,
thank you,
Molly. Good evening, everyone. It's an honor for Carolyn and I to be with you. And we want to begin by acknowledging the land and waters of all our diverse places, the plants and animals that share this planet with us, especially those who walked these places before us, wherever we are. We wish to express gratitude to our teachers, gratitude to all of you who are gathering at this moment on behalf of young people in schools. Special note of gratitude to Molly, who so faithfully works to create spaces for us to touch one another's lives. We want to frame our conversation with you. The ideas we'll talk about are broader than circle practice. Our own work is circle-based restorative justice that includes other practices such as conferencing, restorative chat, and so on. We lead with circles for young people and adults as a tier one universal practice in schools. Therefore, we may refer to circles a lot, but this session is about concepts we see as underlying all restorative practices. Drawing on that experience we do have in circle, we want to say everything in circle is an invitation, not a directive. Everything we say is an idea to consider and test against your own wisdom. If it does not fit your wisdom, please set it down and leave it. We want to offer our ways of thinking about this work, but not suggest that is the only way. We're still working on language habits to reflect that stance. So if we use words like should, must, or have to, we apologize and ask you to convert them, if you can, to invitation words, not directive words. Our offering tonight comes out of our belief that how you hold yourself in relation to those you work with is as important as what you do with those you work with. The beliefs that guide your work are as important as the strategies you use to implement your work. We often operate without deliberate and conscious examination of the beliefs that guide our work. So in this session, we want to explore key beliefs and frameworks that are foundational for us in cultivating healthy school culture using restorative practices. This discussion is not meant to tell you what to believe, but to stimulate your own thinking about the beliefs and assumptions that are the basis of your work. So tonight we're talking about being in a restorative framework rather than doing in a restorative framework. This is about what is going on inside us. What do we believe about human nature and human potential? What do we believe about the process of learning? We invite everyone to take a deep breath and exhale slowly as we begin our exploration of these roots of restorative practice. There's a good reason democratic societies see public education as the foundation for their highest aspirations. Public education is a collective commitment to a vision of a society that affords each individual the opportunity to pursue a meaningful life. For public education to serve as the great equalizer in our society, it is essential that success be possible for all children, including those from the bottom of the social scale, as well as those in the middle and up. In the end, our schools are a reflection of our values as a society. Schools we create mirror the society we create for ourselves. Within school, the relationships that develop between adults and children mirror the relationships adults have with one another. If adults feel respected, safe, and supported, these values will be replicated in their relationships with the children. Attending to the needs of adults and to the relationships among the adults is equally important to attending to the relationships with and among the children. Ultimately, the question of how to build a healthy school community opens the larger question of how to build a healthy community within our society. We believe that the regular and routine use of circle practice and other restorative practices is a key infrastructure of a healthy school community. Because schools are the one universal developmental institution outside of the home, they are the one place where children are in regular, ongoing relationship with adults. The quality of learning and growth that takes place within school depends on healthy relationships between adults and children, as well as among adults and children. Restorative practices support individual learning and growth, and at the same time, they contribute to the development of a positive school community for all. Carolyn?
Good evening, everyone. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the theories within social science, within education, that I think are relevant to understanding the power of restorative practices, such as circles and also conferences within schools. So there are six groups of theories. The first one is the whole child approach. This draws attention to the importance of social-emotional learning. Insights from what we now call positive psychology have added a lot to our understanding of the importance of emotions and the role of character in academic achievement, their importance in resilience in the face of adverse life events, and successful transition to healthy adulthood. The circle is a process that intentionally speaks and seeks to attend to the whole person and to provide space for emotional, social, and moral development alongside the mental and the physical. Research confirms that skills such as empathy, patience, and emotional self-management can be learned and nurtured within the classroom and school community. The second set of theories focuses on the importance of relationships in human development and the process of cognitive and social learning. Attachment theory in psychology, choice theory within education, an ethic of care within moral philosophy, and social control theory within the field of sociology, all of these theories identify the quality of the bond between adults and children as key to learning and healthy human development. The circle, very simply, is above all a process for building relationships. So we believe that the use of circle and other restorative practices will strengthen trusting and caring relationships between adults and children, as well as among adults and among children, in a way that's highly beneficial to lifelong cognitive and social learning and well-being. The third set of theories falls under the broad umbrella of a whole school approach, highlighting the importance of a positive school climate, a sense of belonging, and a sense of connectedness among schools and adults to the school community. The circle is a space designed to promote a sense of belonging, to cultivate awareness and consideration of others, and to ensure respectful democratic participation for all members of the community. Because the circle process is structured to cultivate and support positive behavior inside, and actually even much more importantly, outside of the circle, we believe it's extremely helpful in generating a positive school climate. The next set, or fourth set of theories that are relevant to you, to the use of circles and conferences in schools, is the field of positive discipline based on the theory of restorative justice, and you will hear a great deal about this in the weeks to come. The circle is a useful structure for generating and articulating shared values and translating these into a set of common and explicit behavioral norms for conduct within the school community. It's also an effective process for conducting an approach for addressing harm that meets the needs of those who have been affected while promoting accountability and responsibility for wrongdoing. Restorative discipline seeks to build a stronger community by involving all the stakeholders and the whole school community in a positive resolution of wrongdoing and using conflict as an opportunity to strengthen positive relationships. The fifth set of theories relevant for the use of restorative practices comes from the understanding of trauma or adverse childhood experiences and their impact on learning and human development. A trauma-sensitive learning environment is one in which a child feels appreciated and cared for by adults at school. The classroom and school environment is emotionally and physically safe. And clearly articulated standards for behavior are reinforced through positive interventions and relationships with adults and peers. Being in positive relationship, the feeling of being recognized, heard, respected, and valued is itself a form of healing. This is a practice that benefits all children, those who are emotionally healthy, and those who are struggling. And it's a way to cultivate the healing benefits of a healthy community that holds the strength to support and nurture all its members through the good times and bad. The final theory is really the embodiment of the practice of mindfulness within the structure of the circle itself. Like the circle process, mindfulness is a wellness technique with a long tradition within human societies. And the circle practice is a mindfulness practice because it encourages participants to slow down and be present with themselves and others. Research on mindfulness within schools shows that simple techniques can greatly improve the quality of attentiveness and calm focus within a classroom. Okay?
Thank you, Carolyn. So we're going to talk now about what we see as the deep-rooted beliefs and assumptions that can support restorative practices in schools. When a vision is strongly rooted in values and principles, there's expansive room for creativity and differentiation for local circumstances. There's no prescription. Each community must find its own way through values and principles to the specific manifestation of the restorative vision for itself. Becoming conscious of those beliefs and aware of their power can enhance the depth and momentum of our work. So we want to talk about our assumptions about human nature and the implications of those assumptions for teaching and learning in a healthy community. Carolyn?
The first core assumption that we hold is that the true self in everyone is good, wise, and powerful. We believe this self is in everyone. It's in you, your students, and the adults you work with every day. The nature of this self is wise, kind, just, good, and powerful. The core self cannot be destroyed. No matter what someone has done in the past, no matter what has happened to him or her in the past. The core self remains as good, wise, and powerful as the day they were born. This model or understanding of the self distinguishes between doing and being. What we do is not the whole of who we are, and we often get confused about this. We mistake the roles we play or the emotions we feel for our core self. Beneath the acts and masks we adopt, we humans adopt, is a deeper and healthier self. Helping students and all members of the school community tune into the goodness and wisdom of their true self is the first step towards realigning their behavior in the world with this deeper self. Okay?
The second core assumption that we identified for the work that we've done together is really captured nicely in a quote from Albert Einstein, so I'm going to begin with that. This idea that the world is profoundly interconnected. Einstein says, "A human being is part of the whole called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty." When Native people say, "We are all related," they mean that human beings are connected to all living creatures and are part of the natural world. Traditional African society uses the term Ubuntu to express the idea that each of us is fundamentally a part of the whole. It translates, "I am because we are." We believe this principle reminds us that there are no throwaway kids or people. We cannot drop out, kick out, or get rid of anything without literally throwing away a part of ourselves. By excluding someone, we harm ourselves as well as the fabric of our community. Every suspension and expulsion reverberates through a web of interconnected relationships with unintended, harmful consequences. Because we're connected, what we do to others, we also do to ourselves, although we may not always realize that this is happening. Many wisdom traditions counsel us to act with this understanding in mind. We are all profoundly interconnected. Carolyn?
Our third core assumption is that all human beings have a deep desire to be in good relationships. We believe all people want to be loved, want to love and be loved, and that all people want to be respected. This may not be what they show in their behavior, particularly when they have not been loved and respected by others, but at our core, we all desire to be in good relationship with others. Okay?
Our fourth core assumption is that all humans have gifts and everyone is needed for what they bring. We believe that in human societies, all gifts are indispensable to the well-being of the whole. Within nature, diversity is a source of strength. Interdependence is essential for survival. It is the way of nature. Every cell in our body is differentiated to perform a specialized function that contributes to the whole. This is as true for families as it is for organizations. Different people are needed because different people see and do things differently. We require the contribution of diverse talents, personalities, and perspectives to find creative and innovative solutions to meeting our needs. It takes a sense of humility, realizing that each of us alone does not have all the answers, and a sense of gratitude for us to be open to all the gifts that others bring. Carolyn?
Our fifth core assumption, my personal favorite, is that everything we need to make positive change is already here. We believe that everything we need to make positive change within our school community is already here. This is because human creativity and human commitment are our greatest treasure and our greatest hope. We believe school communities hold rich reservoirs of talent and wisdom that are waiting to be accessed. If we fail to see ourselves as creators of our school culture, we deny the power to change it. We need to learn how to tap into the wisdom and creative energy of all our human resources, students, teachers, parents, extended families, administrators, secretaries, custodial staff, school resource officers, and many more who are present within our community. By doing this, we liberate the potential of our collective power to create the world we desire.
Okay. Our sixth core assumption is that human beings are holistic. Our minds, bodies, emotions, and spirits are in all that we do. These are equally important parts of us as human beings. Each provides ways of knowing and sources of both knowledge and wisdom. Learning is a holistic process engaging body, heart, and spirit, as well as the mind in an integrated process. In this approach to creating healthy schools, we seek to engage all parts of ourselves, our intellect, emotions, spirit, and body. We seek to attend to the needs of each of these parts of ourselves so that we can nurture the multiple intelligences that are a part of the human capacity. Carolyn?
Our final core assumption is that we need practices to build habits that help us connect with our core self. We need practices that help us live in a way that aligns with our values and helps us build healthy relationships in classrooms and school communities. The kind of relationship among students and adults within a school community is a matter of intention. If we choose to nurture positive relationships, they will flourish. We are used to saying the magic of circle is in the practice of circle. Okay?
So these core assumptions are not unique to us, and they're not actually unique to restorative practices either. It's one of the things that I think is very hopeful about the restorative justice movement is that the key ideas and concepts that are the foundation of our work are showing up in lots of different streams of discipline and lots of different work that's out there. These are, however, not the assumptions that most of our social institutions are built on. And so there's constant pressure on us in a different direction from these core assumptions. And so we think that for us, when we were writing Heart of Hope and Circle Forward, it was important for us to spend time just in conversation with each other, struggling to articulate what our core assumptions were and checking that against the thinking about the work itself. So in there's some practice suggestions for the end of this session, and the first one is about these core assumptions and invites you to choose a core assumption that has energy for you. And it might be one you strongly agree with or one that you disagree with, and to find a colleague with whom you can have a conversation about that core assumption. And then also to think about, do you have other core assumptions that are important foundation of your work? Because I think that the daily grind of the work in schools often disconnects people from these fundamental visionary principles that motivated people to want to be educators. And so a process of taking the time to think about your own core assumptions and to find others to talk about that with, I think is really helpful to maintain energy and passion for this work. So in addition to those core assumptions, there are four key areas of focus for building healthy relationships that surfaced in our conversations as we were working on Circle Forward. And so we want to talk a bit about those four areas for effective implementation. It's important to develop good practice, taking those factors into account. Carolyn?
So again, we thought about the four key areas that we really oftentimes don't attend to very very intentionally in our shared life together. The first one is talking about power. We believe that healthy power in one's life is a fundamental human need. If you think back to our very first core assumption, we stated that the core self is good, wise, and powerful. Personal power directed by the core self is a form of healthy power. It doesn't operate at the expense of someone else. The way power typically operates in our society, however, has caused a great deal of harm because our society is structured in hierarchies. A person with more power is assumed to be more worthy as a human being and is treated accordingly. These one-up, one-down structures operate in our homes, our schools, our faith communities, our social services, workplaces, and government. Issues of power permeate human interactions in our personal community and public parts of our life. Though these power dynamics profoundly shape our interactions, they frequently, typically, go unexamined. In schools, as in all communities, there's also a need for order. Teachers and adults in general possess authority, and that authority is a form of power, and it's used to direct the behavior of children in the interest of the larger community. For children, learning to respect legitimate authority and cooperate with it is a basic task of growing into healthy adulthood. But there's a paradox that comes with the power of authority. If individuals feel that authority is legitimate and fair, they'll accept it and respect that power. When they feel it's unjustified, they'll resent it and typically resist it. The paradox is that in order for authority to be seen as legitimate, it's necessary that the individual feel that their own personal power is still respected by those in authority. Under conditions of respectful and trusting relationships, adults have enormous influence over the behavior of young people who have a deep desire to remain and to be in positive relationship with important people in their lives. The more adults cultivate a foundation of good relationship with young people, the more adult authority will be respected. Paradoxically, the less adults use power to control the behavior of young people, the greater is their influence to shape that behavior through the cultivation of a healthy respect for authority. The circle process, the conference process, and all restorative practices help individuals and the group experience healthy power in the presence of each other. In the circle, each person has a voice, each person is valued, and no one is more important than anyone else. It is an experience of healthy personal power or power with when people are experiencing restorative practices. Okay?
Another concept that we thought is really important to think about is the idea of justice. All human beings have a strong, innate sense of justice. Justice is not something that's defined by law. Human beings view and experience every relationship in their lives as either just or unjust, and every interaction in their lives as just or unjust. In schools, youth often perceive their relationship with adults to be unjust when adults exercise their power in ways that do not respect the personal power of youth. Young people respect the authority of adults, who in turn are respectful of their personal power to exercise meaningful choices. In any community, when someone treats another person unjustly, there's a need to restore the sense of justice by having an individual participate in a process that acknowledges the wrong and makes repair through sincere apologies and meaningful reparations. The direct participation of the individuals who feel unjustly treated and those responsible for harming others is essential in repairing the positive relationship between these members of the community, so that the future relationships are no longer tainted by a continuing sense of injustice. We also felt it was very important for educators to pay attention to and think about the question of belonging. That need for belonging is not just a result of our socialization. It is deeply imprinted in our genetic makeup. The need to belong is so central to our sense of self that we will do whatever is necessary to meet that need, including violating our values and disconnecting from the core self. If we cannot meet the need for belonging in healthy ways, we will resort to unhealthy ones. For better or for worse, schools are communities where students experience either belonging or not belonging to that community. It is important for schools to nurture a sense of belonging in every student. The pain and fear of not belonging is at the root of much violence and harm in our schools. Living together as if everyone belongs might be the biggest violence prevention measure we could ever devise. The use of restorative practices helps us to live as if everyone belongs. Restorative practices offer a way to create and continually enhance that sense of belonging. Carolyn.
So lastly and finally, we felt we needed to talk about joy. As human beings, we are born with the capacity to experience joy. Every baby, regardless of cultural origins, responds with wriggling delight to a smiling face. This universal reaction reflects an inborn human capacity for joy. Joy is a powerful positive emotion. It increases our capacity to think and speak clearly. Mental work is more effective if it's done with joy. Joy is an antidote to stress. The ability to access joy even in difficult circumstances is a quality of resilience. Holistically, our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being is enhanced by joy. If we bring joy into our classrooms, we influence others to be more joyful. All of us, children and adults, are better able to learn, teach, and grow when we experience a sense of joyous well-being within our environment. Cultivating joy is a practice, one that is self-reinforcing as it grows, but it initially requires intentional choice and energy. The circle and other restorative practices are spaces where we connect with a joyous appreciation of ourself and others. Circles are one way to consciously cultivate a joyous school environment. I want to share then, as the words of the Sufi poet Rumi reminds us of this capacity for joy, when he writes, "Keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there."
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Just a note here that there are a couple more. The second practice suggestion addresses thinking about that question of power, noticing how power operates in your own life. Where are you the person with more power in a relationship? Where are you the person with less power in a relationship? Just inviting you to maybe pick a day and notice throughout that day how power operates, and especially where it might operate unconsciously. Those are the places that we have to really be paying attention to. And there is a third suggestion for practice following the session that is very much about how all of these ideas that we've been talking about run around inside you. What's going on inside as you work to live your core assumptions around the vision of restorative justice. And just want to note that these are just suggestions if they're helpful to you, and if you find that it would be useful to adapt those in some way, then we invite you to do that. Okay, Molly, I think we're ready to
open. Yeah, I think we'd love to open it up to your comments and thoughts and questions.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, our host, Molly, got kicked out of the system and can't get back in. So my name is Matthew Albrecht. I know many of you, and some I don't. I work with the Peace Alliance. So I'm going to take over from here until Molly can get back in. And so anybody who would like to ask questions of Carolyn and Kay, thank you both, by the way. It's been really informative and fascinating, and a lot of kind of the foundation, it seems like, of what people who want to get into this work will be really needing to hold and learn, and probably throughout this course. Would you say that it's just kind of a foundational piece of this big puzzle of these restorative processes, or is that?
That was our intention.
Yes.
That at the first session, it makes sense for us to talk about, the foundational principles and values and ideas that that inspire people, that staying in touch with these feeds us energy when things are discouraging. And so it's not just a sort of an abstract thing. It actually, I think, has a very practical implication in the work that I need to keep going back to these because they are the source of energy for me when it's tiring or discouraging.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. So let me just say a couple things. First of all, anybody who wants to ask a question and have a conversation, you can press the 1 key on your phone and we'll go through and call on you. And just a reminder in general, we have the screen share tool, we have the web page with all of these resources, and the resources that you all are mentioning tonight and others, we'll make sure and post all of those resources onto that web page so that people can learn more and go deeper. And Carolyn and Kay, if there's anything, you know, as you're thinking about this overnight or even during the coming weeks, let us know and we'll keep posting stuff on there that folks might find useful. Let's go ahead and open up the lines here. So again, you can push 1 on your keypad, and we will open up the lines for you. Let's start with Sandra. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, I'm calling from Wisconsin.
Hey,
I love everything that you're presenting. I've been a student of Marshall Rosenberg, and I, as a consultant, after leaving teaching at a multiple intelligence school, which was the only one of its kind in our state back in the early 90s. Been traveling nationally working with tribal schools, and more recently doing substitute teaching in between my consults here in the Milwaukee area, about 7 districts. And what I have encountered in all of the districts is about 85% of the students are miserable, unhappy, depressed. because and many of them tell me, we love to learn, but school is not about learning. It's about prescribed information that we are told to absorb and play back on a test. And our own creative inquiry is not engaged. Our co-creating our own education doesn't, there's no room for that because of certain standards and expectations and curriculum requirements. So school for, and I'm not exaggerating, but I would guess my guessing is about 85% of the students I've seen in seven different districts are quite stressed, as well as their teachers, are unhappy, and I love the restorative practices. However, unless those structures open up and change where there's power with the student in creating their own educational program, I feel sad that I think there could be, there would be more opportunity for what you are doing and what I am doing to help students flourish. But there has to be a change in the structure that is current right now in all these schools.
I would say, Sandra, I concur with you greatly in terms of the current state. And it's certainly, I don't know if I would go with 85%, but it's pretty palpable, a sense of oppression and unhappiness in a lot of schools all the time. And I would say the good news is, and I agree with you, there's a great deal that needs to change. But again, this, I'll go back to some of our core assumptions. One is that we have the capacity to create change from wherever we are. And I've seen this myself in schools, that the shift to curiosity, to creativity, to a sense of delight in just what lies within each person, whether they are a child or the adult, is just waiting there to be accessed. And yeah. I have experienced this over and over and over again, and it breaks my heart because it's so simple. It's right here. And but that's the good news. The good news is it is right there, and it is waiting there because people do have, you know, this is one of the reasons we said we had to talk about joy, because it is right there within us. And waiting, somebody is knocking on the door, it will open a window. And we just need to open that window. It's not all we need to do, but it's how we can begin. And we also need to realize these are our schools. These are our lives. These are, we do have the power to change. The powerlessness that many people feel, and I'm very sympathetic to it because the obstacles and the issues are great. Nonetheless, we have power to make change from wherever we are, and it makes a difference. That's been my experience.
I also want to add that this, for us, this whole restorative practices approach and this philosophy is about fundamental cultural change in the schools. So a part of what it, if it moves forward, it will change those conditions that you're talking about, because it is about paying attention to the whole human being. So the vision for me is about a shift that will impact those aspects, as well as how things are handled when something goes wrong with students.
I can imagine administration saying, but it's a time element. We've contracted with our school district for 45 minutes of algebra for this time of seventh grader life, and we can't interrupt it with something else. That's what we contracted. I actually heard those words. We've contracted for 45 minutes of this kind of prescribed information to the students and to do something else within that 45 minutes, it's going to take away from their ability to learn algebra and perform on the test. I mean, that's
well, let me share a story. This comes out of Baltimore. And
I need
at
people,
a,
so yes.
At a alternative high school in Baltimore, the kids were having difficulty in the math class. In that particular school, there had been someone coming from, a community mediation agency who had been coming into the school and doing some circles and doing a little bit of training. So students are having trouble with math in a high school class, and one student says, we need a circle. And the teacher says, well, I don't do circles. I don't know how to do a circle. There was a little bit of training, but I don't do circles. And the kid said, I do. The teacher allowed this student to organize the class in a circle, and they held a circle. I don't know what they said, but the teacher went home that weekend and reorganized his curriculum to be more effective with the students.
That is so hopeful.
Yes, it is.
You know, yeah, and there is enormous. I do share your sense of pessimism, and yet it's counterbalanced by these experiences that Kay just described that I have over and over and over again, and that gives me a lot of hope because people respond to this, and I do think that there is a shift. I want to say that. There's a recognition, so I'm in schools, there's more space for advisories, this concept that you want to have a place where students would connect with adults. There is a recognition of school climate that it matters, that there is a huge now recognition on social emotional learning. So it's small steps in a direction. And I think we can't afford to wait for those at the top to figure it out. I think we need to trust the hearts and minds of people to get there a lot quicker.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Let's see. Up next, we have Susan. Hi, Susan. Please say where you're from as well.
Hi. Thank you. I'm from Denver, Colorado, and I'm really wanting to share that I so enjoy the pause that you have provided for us, the platform for stepping back and thinking about the theories, the assumptions, these key areas, so that just kind of that whole stepping back and pausing as we dig into this work together in the next several weeks. I'm really grateful. I kind of anticipated we'd get on and start talking about this is what I'm doing and that's what I'm doing and this is what I'm finding and these are my frustrations and these are my celebrations, which I'm sure will come. But I'm just feeling immensely grateful for the theories that are so grounding for me. And as you were speaking through those, just my ability to say, oh, yeah, where am I with that? Where am I with that? How knowledgeable am I about that? Oh, golly, I might want to work more in that area. And the beautiful assumptions about human nature, just taking the time to review those. And then, of course, finally, the key areas. So I'm just feeling really encouraged about the way you all showed up for this first class and how you're inviting me to show up for the rest of the class. So thank you very much. I'm complete.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thank you. And I think that for educators right now, there is so little space to breathe and to reflect. But one of the most important things we can do for educators is try to create some of those spaces.
And I want to say, too, that this is a creative process where we need to access our creativity and our heart and our spirit to bring all this to what is a challenge, all the challenges. How do we care for our children? How do we care for ourselves? So there's no easy, this is not an easy quick fix. There's wonderful techniques, there's wonderful processes, but we need us all to think deeply about what we're doing and how to do it. So I'm so grateful that you you can feel the power in taking the time to think these things at a deeper level.
Great. Well, thank you, Susan. Let's go to our next caller. I just had to say that, so I felt like a radio host. Ramon. Ramon, where are you from? Are you with us, Ramon? Are you muted, possibly? There you are.
Okay, yeah. Hi, I'm Ramon. I'm from San Diego, California. Well, I'm currently working at a local middle school here in San Diego. I am the behavior specialist, and this is the first year that we have been working towards the whole implementation of restorative practices. But for me, the thing that I'm a little bit curious for is to just really, how do you get the teacher buy-in as well as the student buy-in when you are implementing these practices?
Well, I think I'll just jump in there. I do a lot of work with schools myself, and I would say that, first of all, the idea is we try to issue this as an invitation rather than trying to require or compel people to do things. But we usually find that sitting people, adults, in a circle and having them talk about the challenges that they, you know, some of these key ideas, what they're trying to accomplish in schools, what their core mission, where they see their challenges are, mm-hmm. starts to open them up to a deeper journey. I think when we ask people whether or not suspension helps solve the issue, very few people mm-hmm. say that it does. Very few people. But they don't really feel like they have time and space to think of another alternative. They don't. And ironically, and you'll hear, I think, from other people further on in the course, when the adults slow down a bit and reflect, they realize they have a lot of other options. And some of these practices, like suspension, like being very reactive, because they've been triggered and so on, start to shift in their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel good in this process. If you force people, it becomes just another thing, and they're so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Here comes yet another thing I'm being told to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we try to really work with people's desires for things to be positive and respect much of the wisdom that they already have. They just oftentimes aren't given the opportunity to reflect and share that wisdom. And the same thing happens with the young people, who oftentimes are so enthusiastic about this that it encourages the adults even before.
Right.
The kids are usually there ahead of the adults, and they feel mm-hmm. respected in this process, and they behave in ways that really impress the adults.
Right. And for us, I think right now as a school, we are a Title I school. We're in the middle of a really low-income community where 99% of our student population is Hispanic, and our staff happens to be white. So mm-hmm. right now we have been seeing a lot of issues from just last year, where we had a diverse teaching staff, from Hispanic to African-American to white to different ethnicities, to now this year having mostly white educators, where we have been able to see that even the student buy-in to the educators themselves is changing dramatically. And mm-hmm. where we are trying to work with restorative practices is allowing the teachers to do circles in the classroom, and also allowing the parents to come in mm-hmm. to the circle, so it kind of becomes a community circle rather than just the students feeling like we are trying to put them down for something. Mm-hmm. So we invite the families and community members. But we are still even seeing such a divide between students and educators. So we're hoping that with restorative practices, we will be able to really work something where our students are feeling as students and are having that buy-in with our educators, and as well our educators to be a little bit more open-minded to the community that they are working for.
Yes, I think that if in your situation, it's really essential, it sounds like, to do a lot of community building circles that break down like the social distance, so that as the students get to know the teacher as a human being, the teacher gets to know the students and families in a more human way, that would really help. So I think it's just going to take some real focus on creating spaces where they share stories from their lives. The kids share stories, the families share stories, and the teachers share stories from their own lives, because that's how people start to see themselves in each other and realize that we're very connected. We're not as different as we maybe thought we were. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You.
It's fantastic that you get that you're bringing parents in. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, Ramon. Good comments and question. Just a reminder that if you have a question, you can push the one key. We've got several folks in the queue, but just want to remind everybody else, it's the one key you want to be pushing. Let's go next to Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Where are you from?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, thank you. So I'm from Fort Collins, Colorado, and I met Kay about 8 years ago at a wonderful half-day kind of workshop, and I've been going 100 miles feeling alone in this work, yet I know there's many, many of us all around the world doing it, and I just want to say thank you for these wonderful, nurturing, strong roots for systematic change, because to me that is the essence of what we're doing, but we don't hardly get to talk about these kind of things when we're out in the field working. They are the essence, but they aren't necessarily what gets talked about. So I appreciate that a lot. I am doing a program for elementary school teachers and children where I teach social-emotional learning. It's called Peacekeeper Circles, where we meet weekly. I give a hands-on training, and I'm with teachers and students. And the things that I'm hearing from teachers, so this addresses to, I think it was Susan maybe, who was talking about how do we have the time? How do we impress upon the districts to make the time for social emotional learning and what it's doing in the classroom? And I would say I've trained somewhere around 200 teachers now, and there's probably 98% of them who absolutely love this program because they do, like you said, get to know their students. There's a sense of belonging. They get to understand how to make the connections within their classroom. The teachers now are just overly exuberant about, I would take an hour for this a week. I would not just do the half an hour, because the time that it saves in an elementary school classroom is way beyond what this half hour accomplishes. And so I'm excited because I do feel like social-emotional learning is being more accepted and more wanted. And once I get into a classroom, it's a no-brainer for the whole entire school to use the program so that the whole school-wide knows how to speak to each other and how to resolve conflict and how to care for one another and how to show up authentically and be respectful and all of those things. The question, I guess, that I have is, to impress upon school districts. What I do is develop relationships with principals and counselors and teachers, and then I work my way in slowly into a school. The district itself is sort of not on board yet. And I've been in 9 schools that are completely, every teacher is trained, and there's still sort of shades on these administrators or whoever they are that make the big decisions, are not yet embracing restorative practices to the degree that we're seeing effectiveness. Any comments, any help, any suggestions?
I'll just say quickly, I think that, sometimes people say that those at the top, the district folks, will be influenced by the data. I mean, this does support teaching and learning, and I think that the data that's coming out of Oakland is showing that it not just reduces suspensions and reduces difficult behavior problems, but also increases reading and math scores as well. But I do think that that's not enough. I think we need to, we've been working on trying to develop some training in restorative practices for superintendents and for people who are leading school systems so that they realize the sorts of changes that they need to make at their level to create an environment where teachers and people in the actual schools are able to do what they feel is actually ethical and correct learning and teaching. And so we're sort of realizing that we've left out of our trainings those at the top so that they can also look at their core assumptions and also look at their own journey towards learning. How did they grow well? How did they come up in this world? What helps them when they, how did they learn? And so I think that's a missing piece in some of the things we're trying to do. But I do think it's, again, there are signs of optimism. Here in Boston, I work in the Boston Public Schools quite a bit, and they just appointed a deputy superintendent in charge of social emotional learning, and that's a big step forward for a big school district to do this. And I think this is happening slowly but surely across the country.
And I have the attitude of just do it, just go for it and do it and find the people who hear it and love it and get it and not wait for the administrative powers that be to get there. And that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
But I do, in the beginning, feel kind of alone in it. I would like support, but I don't want to be driven by that. But I would love to see the vision become fruitful, because what my big vision is not only to be in the elementary schools, but of course all of the feeder schools into the middle schools and high schools, getting the next version of CIRCLE, so that we're actually dealing with the whole child, not just the elementary version, but keep it going. So I have a gigantic vision that I don't know if I can accomplish in my lifetime, but I feel like just do it. Just keep going, just one step after the next. And that's what I want to offer to everyone, is if you're doing any element of this, just keep going.
So there are a couple things that I thought about as you were talking. Now, one of those is in Chicago, there's a suburban school district where Robert Spicer did quite a bit of training, and I was at a meeting where some of the administrators from that district stood up, and they were sort of giving witness. But one of them said that the teachers are so happy because now they can teach. Yeah, they have been doing so many restorative practices in schools, and the teachers are so happy because now they can teach. The other thing I want to point to, it's not an answer to your question, but I just want to give credit that there's been tremendous movement in the last 2 years toward restorative practices by the headquarters of big city schools. Some of that's problematic, but there is at least showing interest at that level. And that is the direct result of the school-to-prison pipeline. That was not administrators or high-level policy folks getting it. It was a result of grassroots pressure. And I just want to acknowledge the incredible work that was done for so many years before it finally sort of got traction and caused this shift. But the shift is big. I work across the country. The shift is huge.
It is huge. And I'm excited about that, Kay, because this is the first time in my life that I'm finally doing something that I feel like it's the right time. I'm not 10 years ahead. I am right in the flow. And let's keep doing it together and supporting each other and holding hands and walking through the fire, whatever that is, and bringing that sense of community and that sense of camaraderie and understanding too. And I'm starting with our babies because I felt like that's where I had to narrow down my focus and felt like I could make the biggest difference was in elementary version. And what's happening in these schools is amazing. What the teachers and kids and administrators are seeing is amazing. So if anybody wants to check out my website, it's peacecircles.com, and it's the Peacekeeper page. And I'm happy to talk with anyone about the program. So
thank
I'd love
you.
To share it.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. We have some more folks. I have Lee up. I'm not sure if you raised your hand or accidentally hit the 2 key. Lee, did you have a question? To assume not, because it's the wrong button. So let's go to Shari. Hi, Shari. Where are you from?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
I can.
Oh, wow. It's a miracle of technology. I'm here. This is all very new to me, but I'm loving this and so appreciative of what you two women are bringing and the way you're starting this off. I'm calling from Northern California, and my question actually has to do with I am in front of a lot of decision makers and school leaders. I'm regularly give presentations to administrators, and we've got some big school districts out here that are working on, whole school climate change and restorative practices being a really important piece of that. And I'm not exactly sure how to articulate this, but I feel like I do a pretty good job of helping them make the connection between restorative practices and school climate. And because we are being told that we need to improve school climate, and then they see that, oh, restorative practices is, kind of the how-to there, that they're getting that. And I also in front of a lot of teachers, I do, circles with teachers and so forth and do a lot of training. And I feel like the teachers get it on a certain level. But then when I'm in a room full of administrators, I guess what I'm looking for is a soft approach or a languaging or something where, I can start off a circle with mindfulness with a group of teachers, and where there might be some squirming and so forth, that it just sort of works. I don't know. It feels like I'm at risk of being too woo-woo or too, like, what is this? It's a bunch of California, whatever, So I'm looking for languaging, and I'm looking for kind of that soft approach, I guess,
and I just want to say that Nancy Riestenberg is coming next, and she'd be a way better resource than I am. She does
great.
This a lot.
Beyond
us, there's somebody coming who I think really be good at answering this question.
But also I want to say that I think, to some extent, when you look at some of the
you know, the sense of urgency that leaders need to pay attention to around this. You know, I think, as Kay said, the school-to-prison pipeline really catapulted the idea that, you know, suspensions were really causing such harm, and that was kind of undeniable because of the data. School leaders also are paying attention to things around issues of trauma, around issues that, you know, all the issues that really affect the school climate. I mean, there's a reason why they're paying attention to school climate. And, you know, the other area is what's going on in adolescent brain development and understanding that this is a way to really being creating the correct environment for appropriate development. We're allowing young people the opportunity to not be, to think for themselves, to reason through, to be in touch, to talk about their feelings and reason through their behavior is part of what develops their capacity to for self-management as an adult. It's actually an ongoing process right the way through the university years. So this is also affecting higher ed. All those things speak to the mind of leaders. What I'm hearing in your question is how do we touch their hearts? Because I also think that's the other part of it too, that there's an experiential component that I think we need to touch people with, not just experiential, but getting to their core of their responsibility and to their own values. So I actually am, as I said, really just aware that I think that's an important piece of our working with higher level policymakers and administrators is not just convincing their minds with data, which is important, very important, but also figuring out ways to have them look at their own journey in life, to do the same reflections on their own core assumptions, and then what are their responsibilities as leaders of a of school systems. So I don't have a quick answer, but I think it's a problem that I feel a similar urge to try to work on right now.
That reminds me, Carolyn, of a recent experience I had with judges. So it was not in the school context, but I think that that it really would have
similar,
applied.
Yeah.
So I had a whole group of judges, and I was to do this very brief training thing, and I put them in circle and did a round about values, and then I did a round where I asked them what touches their heart in their work. And it was amazing, not just in terms of my experience of the stories they told, but the different individuals afterwards told me they had never seen other judges in the same way because of the stories that got told. So you're absolutely right, Carolyn. That's so important.
That's a great prompt. So I think that maybe in some ways I wasn't really that clear about being this specific about my question. I do feel like I do a really good job of standing up there and saying these are all the great reasons why you should be doing this, and here's all the data, and here, you know, I'm pretty good at that. I'm good at being a circle keeper too, but so when I sit down in circle, so like we're coming up here, I'm coming up to another admin training, and part of the problem is that we have huge numbers, you know, in these trainings where I like to do it with a group of 30, you know, at the most, or 35 maybe, you know, you can do a good circle. So I have a big group, and so what we're going to do is we're going to do a fishbowl. You know, we're going to have 20 in the middle, and it becomes a little bit like, you know, here's your demonstration circle. You know, here we go, whatever. But it's okay. But I guess it's about setting up the context for circle time to bring that mind, you know, bring the mind into that place. You know, to present the ritual of it, the ceremony of it, to create the zone without alienating people, right? I mean, you need people to feel safe in that space and welcomed, and I guess I'm looking for wording and if there's languaging that people feel is working in all kinds of different contexts of people coming, all different walks of life that are, you know, that might be a little bit like, whoa, I don't know if I'm really going to be okay if we've got a feather in the middle and we're talking about let's honor our ancestors, and it's like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to be there with you right there, right now, you know. So going into the ceremonial elements of it and that getting that circle mind space happening, do you get what I'm saying?
I do.
I think I do. I mean, I think it's yes.
It's a conversation, I think, so give
me a call. But I also think you want to, I would also say that trust the humans in that circle as well. I mean, yes, they may not be used to it. They may feel that they're very busy and, you know, they want to get the information very quickly. But go out of your way to say, you know what, for this period of time, we're going to put away our cell phones. We're going to put away all these things. And we are going to, you know, and you can explain too, this is a ritual, and we have rituals in all kinds of ways of our lives. But trust them as human beings, as Kay did with these judges, to speak from, they're not given, all of us are not given the opportunity to speak from our hearts very often. And in some ways, maybe the more you go up the hierarchy, the more you really are valued for what's in your head, and you feel like what's in your heart stays home. But I would just trust their humanity, and my guess is they would respond like everyone else, and certainly that's been my experience too. It's hard to get the opportunity.
And you choose the things you use in a circle to fit the group, so you don't use a feather if a feather isn't going to work, right? We've done circles with hockey teams, and we use a hockey puck as a talking piece. So it really is partly a matter of choosing the things that don't create a barrier for the particular people who are in that circle, and you can keep your opening simple. It has to be there, but you can keep it quite simple. So I think and then inviting them to stretch a little bit, as Carolyn said.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Shari. Well, we have about 3 minutes left before we need to close up. And I wonder, Kay and Carolyn, if you'd like to make any closing remarks, or if we have one person left, or if you want to kind of wrap with that, what would you prefer?
If we have one person left to take a quick question, we could probably...
Yes, why don't we do that?
Okay. Respond? Yes.
Great. Great. So, Greg, you are on. Thank you. Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Greg. I'm from Freiburg, Maine, and there are actually three of us online tonight. So it's nice to have a kind of community of our own coming into this little circle. But my question was on the idea of healthy personal power. And I struggle with this personally because I'm a middle-aged white guy in a diverse school culture, and I want to be able to share the power that I know I have, but I don't know always the best way to do that.
I face that as well in lots of places. So for a very important first step is that willingness and starting to ask yourself the question. And then I think in trying to create some spaces where one of the difficulties is if we walk around with power, which for white people a lot comes out of our privilege, that we're unconscious of when it's operating. So then you have to look for creating really safe feedback mechanisms where people could say how they're experiencing our power. And the circle's a particularly good mechanism for safe feedback. And beginning to sit in those spaces and try to just listen with no explanation, you know, no, trying to, noticing our own defensiveness and then releasing it, because we intend to do good, it's very hard to take in that information about some place where maybe what we're doing doesn't feel good to somebody. This is a struggle for me all the time. And learning to sit with my own sense of shame if something comes up, but stay, not run, not hide, stay in the space, and keep listening, and keep listening, and keep inviting. I have developed a practice in my training of saying that it would never be my intention to cause harm or do something that feels bad for someone else. I've learned that I can inadvertently do that. So I invite you, if I do that, I invite you, if you can, to let me know. So you begin to open up that space for feedback and begin to understand where the power operates. And then we cannot answer these things by ourselves. This has to be a collective process of figuring out, then how do we change that dynamic? How do we shift it?
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Yes, yes. And I would say, too, that, you know, I think that this is, you know, this is just to echo what Kay said, this is not something that any of us has the capacity to fix alone, and that one of the benefits of spaces like Circle, and there are many other kinds of spaces that are inviting us to be in relationship in a different way other than the structured ways that we have that are very entrenched internally and externally. So this is a lifelong commitment and journey, and also something that we need to be courageous and creative, because we do need all of us to figure this out. It's not, there isn't a, you know, there isn't a simple answer to how to make this shift, but a commitment to it is essential.
So, Matthew, I have a closing, if I may.
A close.
Yes, please.
Yes? Okay. So this is for all those who are, that we feel getting in our way. Okay. He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. By Edwin Markham. Thank you so much.
A beautiful quote for a beautiful evening. Thank you both so much, Carolyn and Kay. That was so rich and profound, really, to hear all that the years of work you've done brought into this beautiful space. And it was great to hear from all the participants as well. So much rich conversation. So thank you for kicking this off. And it's going to be a great few weeks, I know, coming up in the rest of this course. Just want to remind folks that next week will be, the title is Circling the Square. It's with Nancy Reistenberg and Rita Alfred. Rita and Nancy will talk about the structure of whole school restorative practices implementation and identify challenges to not only practices, but to keeping focused on the spirit and the intent of a restorative school, stories of exploration, coaching, and finding the ever-elusive time will be offered. And then all of our participants will be also encouraged to share their own journey. So that should be great. So be sure and stick around for that. And we'll also be linking to a PDF of the practice suggestions about core assumptions to our master website page that you all received in the emails, where the PDF reflections on the inner journey of working in restorative justice that Kay shared and is already linked there. So all that will be listed there. And just a thank you to Living Justice Press. Their website is livingjusticepress.com. And you can go there to find out much more about Kay and Carolyn's books and work, which are really phenomenal resources. Also, there's information and books on next week's faculty, Nancy and Rita. So just with that, I want to just again say thank you so much, Carolyn and Kay, for that beautiful information. And I'm sure many folks are have deepened their understanding and are excited to move forward from all of it. So we appreciate both of you and everyone on the call for participating in the course, and we're looking forward to it all unfolding.
Thank you so much.
So
thank you everyone for being here.
What I'm going to quickly do is open everybody up, and we can all hear each other and say good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.